Side 6. She did several more drawings of me, which were quite good. But there was something in them I didn't like. She didn't bother so much about a nice likeness as what she called my inner character. So sometimes she made my nose so pointed it would have pricked you, and my mouth was all thin and unpleasant. I mean more than it really is, because I know I'm no beauty. I didn't dare think about the 4 weeks being up. I didn't know what would happen. I just thought there would be arguing and she'd sulk and I'd get her to stay another 4 weeks. I mean, I thought I had some sort of power over her. She would do what I wanted. I lived from day to day, really. I mean, there was no plan. I just waited. I even half expected the police to come. I had a horrible dream one night when they came, and I had to kill her before they came in the room. Seemed like a duty, and I had only a cushion to kill her with. I hit and hit, and she laughed, and then I jumped on her and smothered her, and she lay still. But then when I took the cushion away, she was lying there laughing. She'd only pretended to die. I woke up in a sweat. That was the first time I ever dreamed of killing anyone. She started talking about going several days before the end. She kept on saying that she would never tell a soul, and of course I had to say I believed her. But I knew even if she meant it, the police or her parents would screw it out of her in the end. And she kept on about how we'd be friends, and she'd help me choose pictures and introduce me to people and look after me. She was very nice to me those days. Not that, of course, she didn't have her reasons. At last, the fatal day. November the 10th. The 11th was her release day, came. The first thing she said when I took her in her coffee was, "Could we have a celebration party tonight?" "What about guests?" I said, joking. Not that I was feeling light-hearted, need I add. "Just you and me, because... oh, well, we've come through, haven't we?" Then she said, "And upstairs, in your dining room." To which I agreed, I had no choice. She gave me a list of things to buy at the posh grocer's in Lewis. And then she asked if I'd buy sherry and a bottle of champagne, and of course I said I would. I never saw her get so excited. I suppose I got excited too, even then. What she felt, I felt. To make her laugh, I said, "Evening dress, of course." And she said, "Oh, I wish I had a nice dress. And I must have some more hot water to wash my hair." I said, "I'll buy you a dress. Just tell me, like, before the colour and so on, and I'll see what there is in Lewis." Funny. I'd been so careful. And there I was, going red. She gave me a smile, however. "I knew it was Lewis. There's a ticket on one of the cushions. And I'd like either a black dress or, no, a biscuit, stone. Oh, wait." And she went to her paint box and mixed colours, like she did before when she wanted a scarf of a special colour when I was going to London. This colour, and it must be simple. Knee length, not long, sleeves like this," she drew it. "Or no sleeves, something like this, or like this." I always liked it when she drew. She was so quick, fluttery. You felt she couldn't wait to draw whatever it was. Naturally, my thoughts were far from happy that day. It was just like me not to have a plan. I don't know what I thought would happen. I don't even know if I didn't think I would keep the agreement, even though it was forced out of me, and forced promises are no promises, as they say. I actually went into Brighton, and there, after looking at a lot, I saw just a dress in a small shop. You could tell it was real class. At first, they didn't want to sell it without a fitting, although it was the right size. Well, going back to where I parked the van, I passed another shop, a jeweller's, and I suddenly had the idea that she would like a present. Also, it might make things easier when it came to the point. There was a sapphire and diamond necklace lying on a bit of black velvet, shape of a heart, I remember. I mean, they'd arranged the necklace into a heart shape. I went in and it was £300, and I nearly walked right out again. But then my more generous nature triumphed. After all, I had the money. The woman in the shop put it on, and it looked really pretty and expensive. "It's only small stones," she said, "but all very fine water, and these Victorian designs." I remembered Miranda talking one day about how she liked Victorian things, so that did it. There was trouble about the cheque, of course. The woman wouldn't take it at first, but I got her to ring my bank, and she changed her tune very quick. If I'd spoken in a la-di-da voice and said I was Lord Muck or something, I bet... Still, I've got no time for that. It's funny how one idea leads to another. While I was buying the necklace, I saw some rings, and that gave me the plan. I could ask her to marry me, and if she said no, then it would mean I had to keep her. It would be a way out. I knew she wouldn't say yes, so I bought a ring. It was quite nice, but not very expensive, just for show. When I got home, I washed the necklace. I didn't like to think of it touching that other woman's skin, and hid it so that I could get it out at the correct time. Then I made all the preparations, she said. There were flowers, and I put the bottles on the side table and laid out everything really grand hotel, with all the usual precautions, of course. We arranged I was to go down and fetch her at 7. After I took in the parcels, I wasn't to see her. It was like it is before a wedding. What I decided was I would let her come up ungagged and untied just this once. I would take the risk, but watch her like a knife, and I would have the chloroform and CTC handy just in case trouble blew up. Say someone knocked at the door. I could use the pad and have her bound and gagged in the kitchen in a very short time and then open up. Well, at 7, I had my best suit and shirt and a new tie I bought on, and I went down to see her. It was raining, which was all to the good. She made me wait about 10 minutes, and then she came out. You could have knocked me down with a feather. For a moment I thought it wasn't her. It looked so different. She had a lot of French scent, which I gave her on, and she was really made up for the first time since she was with me. She had the dress on, and it really suited her. It was a creamy colour, very simple, but elegant, leaving her arms and her neck bare. It wasn't a girl's dress at all. She looked a real woman. Her hair was done up high, unlike before, very elegant. Empire, she called it. She looked just like one of those model girls you see in magazines. It really amazed me what she could look like when she wanted. I remember her eyes were different too. She'd drawn black lines round them so she looked sophisticated. Sophisticated. Ah, that's exactly the word. Of course she made me feel all clumsy and awkward. I had the same feeling I did when I had watched an imago emerge, and then to have to kill it. I mean, the beauty confuses you. You don't know what you want to do anymore, what you should do. Well, she said, and she turned round, showing off. Very nice, I said. Is that all? She gave me a look under her eyebrows. She looked a real sensation. Beautiful, I said. I didn't know what to say. I wanted to look at her all the time, and I couldn't. I felt sort of frightened, too. I mean, we seemed further apart than ever. And I knew more and more I couldn't let her go. Well, I said, shall we go up? No cords, no gag. Ah, it's too late for that, I said. That's all over. I think what you're doing today and tomorrow is going to be one of the best things that ever happened to you.
One of the saddest, I couldn't help saying.
No, it's not. It's the beginning of a new life and a new you. And she reached out her hand and took mine and led me up the steps. It was pouring, and she took one breath only before she went into the kitchen and through the dining room into the lounge. It's nice, she said.
I thought you said that word meant nothing, I said.
Oh, some things are nice. Can I have a glass of sherry?
I poured us one out each. Well, we stood there. She made me laugh. She kept on pretending that the room was full of people, waving at them, and telling me about them, and them about my new life. And then she put a record on the gramophone. It was soft music, and she looked beautiful.
She was so changed. Her eyes seemed alive, and what with the French scent she had that filled the room, and the sherry, and the heat from the fire, real logs, I managed to forget what I had to do later.
I even said some silly jokes. Anyway, she laughed. Well, she had a second glass, and then we went through to the other room where I'd slipped my present in her place, which she saw at once.
For me?
Look and see, I said. She took off the paper, and there was this dark blue leather case, and she pressed the button,
and she just didn't say anything. She just stared at them. Are they real?
She was awed. really odd. Of course. They're only little stones, but they're high quality.
They're fantastic, she said.
Then she held out the box to me.
I can't take them.
I understand. I think I understand why you've given them to me. And I appreciate it very much, but I can't take them.
I want you to, I said.
But, Ferdinand, if a young man gives a girl a present like this, it can mean only one thing.
What?
I asked. Oh, other people have nasty minds.
I want you to have them, please.
I'll wear them for now. I'll pretend they're mine.
They are yours, I said.
She came round the table with the case. Put them on, she said. If you give a girl jewellery, you must put it on yourself. She just stood there and watched me, right up close to me. Then she turned as I picked up the stones and put them round her neck.
I had a job fastening them. My hands were trembling. It was the first time I'd touched her skin except her hand.
She smelled so nice I could have stood like that all the evening. It was like being in one of those adverts come to life. At last she turned and there she was looking at me. Are they nice?
I nodded. I couldn't speak.
I wanted to say something nice, a compliment.
Would you like me to kiss you on the cheek?
I didn't say. But she put her hand on my shoulders and lifted up a bit and kissed my cheek. It must have seemed hot. I was red enough by that time to have started a bonfire. Well, we had cold chicken and things. I opened the champagne and it was very nice. I was surprised. I wished I'd bought another bottle. Seemed easy to drink, not very intoxicating. Bowie laughed a lot. She was really witty, talking with other people that weren't there again and so on. After supper, we made coffee together in the kitchen. I kept a sharp eye open, of course, and took it through to the lounge and she put on jazz records I'd bought her. We actually sat on the sofa together. Then we played charades. She acted things, syllables of words, and I had to guess what they were. I wasn't any good at it, either acting or guessing. I remember one word she did was butterfly. She kept on doing it again and again, and I couldn't guess. I said aeroplane and all the birds I could think of, and in the end she collapsed in a chair and said I was hopeless. Then it was dancing. She tried to teach me to jive and samba, but it meant touching her. I got so confused, and I never got the time right. She must have thought I was really slow. The next thing was she had to go away a minute. I didn't like it, but I knew I couldn't expect her to go downstairs. I had to let her go up, and I stood on the stairs where I could see if she did any monkey business with the light. The planks weren't up. I'd slipped up there. The window was high. I knew she couldn't get out without my hearing, and it was quite a drop. Anyhow, she came right out, seeing me on the stairs. Can't you trust me? She was a bit sharp. I said, yes, it's not that. We went back into the lounge.
What is it then?
Well, if you escape now, you could still say I imprisoned you. But if I take you home, I can say I released you. I know it's silly, I said. Of course I was acting it a bit. It was a very difficult situation. Well, she looked at me and then she said, let's have a talk. Come and sit here beside me. I went and sat. What are you going to do when I've gone?
I don't think about it, I said.
Will you want to go on seeing me?
Of course I will.
You're definitely going to come and live in London? We'll make you into someone really modern. Someone really interesting to meet.
You'd be ashamed of me with all your friends.
It was all unreal. I knew she was pretending just like I was. I had a headache. It was all going wrong. I've got lots of friends. Do you know why? Because I'm never ashamed of them. All sorts of people. You aren't the strangest by a long way. There's one who's very immoral. But he's a beautiful painter, so we forgive him. And he's not ashamed. You've got to be the same. Not be ashamed. I'll help you. It's easy if you try. It seemed a moment. Anyway, I couldn't stand it any longer. Please. Marry me, I said. I had the ring in my pocket already. There was a silence. Everything I've got is yours, I said. Marriage means love, she said. I don't expect anything, I said. I don't expect you to do anything that you don't want to. You can do what you like, study art, etc. I won't ask anything of you, except to be my wife in name and live in the same house with me. She sat staring at the carpet. You can have your own bedroom and lock it every night, I said.
But that's horrible. It's inhuman. We'll never understand each other. We don't have the same sort of heart.
I've got a heart, for all that, I said.
I just think of things as beautiful or not. Can't you understand? I don't think of good or bad, I just of beautiful or ugly. I think a lot of nice things are ugly, and a lot of nasty things are beautiful.
You're playing with words, I said. All she did was stare at me. Then she smiled and got up and stood by the fire, really beautiful, but all withdrawn. Superior. I suppose you're in love with that Piers Broughton, I said. I wanted to give her a jolt. She was really surprised, too.
How do you know about him?
I told her it was in the papers. It said you and him were unofficially engaged, I said. I saw right off they weren't. She just laughed.
He's the last person I'd marry. I'd rather marry you. Then why can't it be me? Because I can't marry a man to whom I don't feel I belong in all ways. My mind must be his, my heart must be his, my body must be his, just as I must feel he belongs to me.
I belong to you.
But you don't. Belonging's two things. One who gives, and one who accepts what's given. You don't belong to me because I can't accept you. I can't give you anything back.
I don't want much.
I know you don't. Only the things that I have to give anyway. The way I look and speak and move, but I'm other things. I have other things to give, and I can't give them to you because I don't love you.
I said, that changes everything then, doesn't it? I stood up. My head was throbbing. She knew what I meant at once. I could see it in her face, but she pretended not to understand.
What do you mean?
You know what I mean, I said.
I'll marry you. I'll marry you as soon as you like.
Ha-ha, I said.
Isn't that what you wanted me to say?
I suppose you think I don't know you don't need witnesses and all, I said.
Well?
I don't trust you half an inch, I said. The way she was looking at me really made me sick. As if I wasn't human, hardly. Not a sneer. Just as if I was something out of outer space. Fascinating, almost. You think I don't see through all the softer soap stuff, I said.
She just said, Ferdinand?
Like she was appealing. Another of her tricks. Don't you Ferdinand me, I said.
You promised. You can't break your promise.
I can do what I like.
But I don't know what you want of me. How can I prove I'm your friend if you never give me a chance of doing so?
Shut up, I said. Then suddenly she acted. I knew it was coming. I was ready for it. What I wasn't ready for was the sound of a car outside. Just as it came up to the house, she reached with her foot like to warm it, but all of a sudden she kicked a burning log out of the hearth onto the carpet. At the same moment screamed and ran for the window, then seeing they were padlocked for the door. But I got her first. I didn't get the chloroform, which was in a drawer. Speed was the thing. She turned and scratched and clawed at me, still screaming, but I wasn't in the mood to be gentle. I beat down her arms and got my hand over her mouth. She tore at it and bit and kicked, but I was in a panic by then. I got around the shoulders and pulled her where the drawer was with the plastic box. She saw what it was. She tried to twist away her head side to side, but I got the pad out and let her have it. All the time listening, of course, and watching the log. It was smouldering badly. The room was full of smoke. As soon as she was under good and proper, I let her go and went and put the fire out. I poured the water from a vase over it. I had to act really fast. I decided to get her down while I had time, which I did. Laid her on her bed, then upstairs again to make sure the fire was really out and no one about. I opened the front door, very casual. There was no one there, so it was okay. Well, then I went down again. She was still out on the bed. She looked a sight. the dress all off one shoulder. I don't know what it was. It got me excited. It gave me ideas. Seeing her lying there right out, it was like I'd showed her who was really the master. The dress was right off her shoulder. We could see the top of one stocking. I don't know what reminded me of it. I remembered an American film I saw once, or was it a magazine, about a man who took a drunk girl home and undressed her and put her to bed. Nothing nasty. He just did that, and no more, and she woke up in his pyjamas. So, I did that. I took off her dress and her stockings and left on certain articles. Just the brassieres and the other, so as not to go the whole hog. She looked a real picture lying there, with only what Aunt Annie calls strips of nothing on. She said it was why more women got cancer. Like she was wearing a bikini. It was my chance I'd been waiting for. I got the old camera and took some photos. I would have taken more, only she started to move a bit, so I had to back up and get out quick. I started the developing and printing right away. They came out very nice. Not artistic, but interesting. I never slept that night. I got in such a state. There were times I thought I would go down and give her the pad again and take other photos. It was as bad as that. I'm not really that sort, and I was only like it that night because of all that had happened and the strain I was under. Also, the champagne had a bad effect on me. And everything she said. It was what they call a culmination of circumstances. Things were never the same again, in spite of all that happened. Somehow it proved we could never come together. She could never understand me. I suppose she would say I never could have understood her, or would have anyhow. About what I did, undressing her, when I thought after, I saw it wasn't so bad. Not many would have kept control of themselves, just taken photos. It was almost a point in my favour. I considered what to do. I decided a letter was best, and this is what I wrote. I'm sorry for last night. I dare say you think now you cannot ever forgive me. I did say I would not ever use force unless obliged. I think you will admit you did oblige me by what you did. Please understand that I did only the necessary. I took your dress off, as I thought you might be ill again. I showed every respect I could under the circumstances. Please give me the credit for not going so far as some might in the same. I will not say any more. Except, I must have you here a bit longer. Yours sincerely, etc. I didn't put any beginning. I couldn't decide what to call her. Dear Miranda seemed familiar. Well, I went down and took in her breakfast. It was just like I thought. She was sitting in her chair, staring at me. I said, "Good morning." She didn't reply. I said something. "Do you want crispies or cornflakes?" She just stared. So I just left her breakfast with the letter on the tray and waited outside. And when I went back, nothing was touched. The letter was unopened, and she was still sitting there staring at me. I knew it was no good talking. She had it in for me good and proper. She kept it up several days. So far as I know, all she had was some water. At least once a day, when I took in the food she always refused, I tried to argue with her. I took in the letter again, and she read it this time. At least it was torn up, so she touched it. I tried everything. I spoke gentle. I pretended I was angry, bitter. I begged her. But it was all no use. Mostly she just sat with her back to me as if she didn't hear me. I got special things like continental chocolate, caviar, the best food money could buy in Lewis, but it was never touched. I was beginning to get really worried. But then, one morning, when I went in, she was standing by her bed with her back to me. However, she turned as soon as I came in and said, "Good morning," but in a funny tone, full of spite. "Good morning," I said. "It's nice to hear your voice again, is it?" "It won't be. You'll wish you never heard it." "That remains to be seen," I answered. "I'm going to kill you. I realize you'd let me starve to death. Just the thing you would do. I suppose I never brought you any food these last days. She couldn't answer that one. She just stared at me in the old style. You're not keeping me prisoner anymore. You're keeping death prisoner. Well, have some breakfast anyhow, I said. Well, from that time on, she ate normally, but it wasn't like before. She hardly spoke. If she did, it was always sharp and sarcastic. She was so bad-tempered there was no staying with her. If I was ever there more than a minute when it wasn't necessary, she used to spit at me to get out. One day, soon after, I brought in a plate of perfectly nice baked beans on toast, and she just picked it up and hurled it straight at me. I felt like giving her a good clip over the ear hole. About this time, I was fed up with the whole thing. There didn't seem any point in it. I tried everything, but she would keep on holding that evening against me. It was like we'd reached a dead end. Then one day, she actually asked for something. I got in the habit of leaving at once after supper before she could shout at me, but this time she said, "Stop a minute. I want a bath." "It's not convenient tonight," I said. I wasn't ready for that. "Tomorrow?" "Don't see why not. With parole." "I'll give my parole." She said it in a nasty, hard voice. I knew what her parole was worth. "And I want to walk in the cellar." She pushed forward her hands and I tied them up. It was the first time I touched her for days. Well, as usual, I went and sat on the steps of the outer door and she walked up and down in the funny way she had. It was very windy. You could hear it down there. Just the sound of her feet and the wind above. She didn't speak for quite a time. I don't know why, but I knew she wanted to. "Are you enjoying life?" she suddenly came out with. "Not much," I answered, cautious. She walked to and fro 4 or 5 times more. Then she started to hum music. "That's a nice tune," I said. "Do you like it?" "Yes," I said. "Then I don't any more." 2 or 3 more times she went up and down. "Talk to me."
"What about?"
"Butterflies."
"What about butterflies?"
"Why you collect them. Where you find them. Go on. Just talk." Well, it seemed odd. But I talked. Every time I stopped, she said, "Go on, talk." Must have talked half an hour there, until she stopped and said, "That's enough." She went back inside, and I took off the cord, and she went straight and sat on her bed with her back to me. I asked her if she wanted any tea. She didn't answer. All of a sudden, I realized she was crying. It really did things to me when she cried. I couldn't bear to see her so unhappy. I went up close and said, "Look, tell me what you want. I'll buy you anything." But she turned round on me. She was crying all right, but her eyes were blazing. She stood up and walked towards me saying, "Get out. Get out. Get out." It was terrible. She looked really mad. End of side 6.